FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's August 23rd, 2017. And August just about done. We're going to get to the point where we're going to have to go through that blasted daylight savings, or maybe we're back on Eastern Standard. I never remember which is which. We're back on Standard Time, I should say. Anyway, as always, questions, comments, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. So in the news recently, we've got news about NAFTA. For those of you unaware, NAFTA stands for the North American Free Trade Agreement, and it was executed a long time ago by President Clinton, or maybe it was even the Bush 41, and it's had a lot of unintended consequences. There's been some benefits, a lot of negatives to the U.S. At the time when it was passed, the U.S. had a $1 billion trade surplus with Mexico. Now it's got about $160 billion trade deficit. How did this happen? Where's this heading? Sam McElroy is with us from @Financial. Find him at atfinancial.com. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, NAFTA, your original premise was that probably minor modifications. Last night, or yesterday afternoon, President Trump said, we're probably going to have to scrap NAFTA. What's your thinking?
You know, it's hard to really get a gauge on which direction we're going to go. All along the campaign and kind of leading up to recent events, the talk had been that, you know, we were going to try to do away with it, that we were going to start over and maybe try to renegotiate the entire thing. I'd say in the last month or two, it seemed like that was probably less likely to happen, that there were probably going to be some certain key areas that we were going to focus on predominantly, but that it was going to be too much of a chore to try to completely scrap it and start over. But then, as you mentioned, most recently, now there's talk again that that may be the route that we try to take. So at this point, I think it's kind of anyone's guess as far as what the actual eventuality of our course of action is going to look like. But I think either way we go, there's going to be ripple effects and a widespread kind of ramification as far as what happens from there.
And looking at NAFTA, okay, before it was passed, the U.S. had a $1 billion trade surplus thereabouts, a couple billion with Mexico. Now it's got a $160 billion trade deficit. And one of the main reasons is that Mexico has become a backdoor for Chinese exports coming into the U.S. And a lot of that is because of their domestic content requirements of NAFTA, that they're able to bring in basically Chinese cars into the U.S. or cars made largely from Chinese components and call them made in Mexico and not pay any tariff. That one, I would have to bet, is going to change.
Yeah, you would think so. I know that one of the areas that has always been talked about changing is kind of tightening up on regulations, especially with Mexico. And I think that's one of the areas that even when we were looking at not doing a complete overhaul of NAFTA, I think that was still on the table as something that needed to be addressed and needed to be changed. It's kind of interesting because I feel like anytime any major legislation gets passed, there's always the initial concept of what it's supposed to do, how it's supposed to function. But, you know, once it kind of gets kicked into play, all the different parties that are part of it start finding ways to basically utilize the laws to their advantage. And so it's naturally going to migrate and change over time. And I think that's a lot of what we've seen. And now the question is, okay, well, then what response or what's going to happen to be able to close some of these back doors, to be able to tighten regulations and ultimately try to move it back towards what it was intended to do, which was to create more fairness, transparency, equality amongst, you know, North America and amongst our trading partners.
Right. And look, I think that the U.S. pretty much holds all the power in these negotiations. It's just a matter of how far they want to push, right? I mean, isn't that what it comes down to? Because they seem to need us a lot more than we need them.
Well, I think that's true in part, but I think that might be a little bit of an oversimplification. Certainly we can say that the U.S. economy compared to, you know, Canada's economy or Mexico's economy, the United States is the dominant player in the continent and the dominant player as far as trading power. And so in a sense, we're holding all the cards. But I think one of the things that we've seen from a historical standpoint is that anytime you're operating in a global economy, you need allies, you need partners, you need agreements to be able to make sure that you're not constantly, you know, bordering people who are against you, basically, or threatening to go to war. So I think we always have to be careful how much we use the carrot and how much we use the stick. If we wanted to, do we have the ability to basically push our way through and have whatever we want happen, you know, potentially? But is that ultimately going to be the best thing for the country and ultimately set us up for the success for the long run? I don't know. I think there's got to be some kind of middle ground or happy medium kind of in between those two extremes that that'll probably get us to where we're trying to go.
So let's talk about NAFTA, the results, what's happened over the years. So obviously, manufacturing from the U.S. has shifted towards Mexico. We've seen it with Carrier air conditioner, with auto manufacturers. Ford originally was going to build small cars in Mexico. Now it's China. I'm not so sure what the results have been in Canada, other than a massive increase in their energy exports to the U.S. What has Mexico, the people of Mexico, really gotten out of this? It still seems it's totally corrupt, a lot of abject poverty. Have they really benefited from NAFTA, or has it been specific interests, elites in Mexico that have benefited?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that that the people as a whole are probably not the ones reaping the lion's share of the benefit. You know, anytime you have a group of people that don't have the ability to really advocate for themselves, where the government, in a sense, is the one dictating, or where people with money are the ones that are dictating what happens, I think it's always harder for the people ultimately at the very bottom of the pay scale or income scale to make sure that they're getting their share of whatever rewards are being reaped. So I definitely think it's fair to say that, you know, while there may be benefits and I feel like it's so broad in terms of scope, there definitely are probably benefits that Mexico has reaped, benefits that other players have reaped. How much of that actually got its way down to all the different populace or all the different citizens of Mexico is going to be hard to say.
Yeah. So this was something that Trump seemed pretty adamant about. And the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Wright, seems pretty adamant about.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that, you know, another issue is that, you know, NAFTA came about, I believe, about 23 years ago or so. And since then, technologies have changed. So there's industries and technologies and other things like that that currently aren't even been covered under NAFTA. I think that's another area that's going to have to be addressed as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, technology has evolved. Internet sales. Wilbur Ross. I'm sorry, I got his name wrong. Wilbur Wright. What I was thinking of. But yeah, technology, internet, commerce, e-commerce. This could be a major windfall for companies like Amazon, eBay, that would like to internationalize their, or at least bring their operations in a unified way. Right now, you know, you've got to have separate subsidiaries and all this. So Amazon's got Amazon Canada, Amazon Mexico, and there's all sorts of customs and duties involved on the products that get sold from one country to the other. I mean, that's just one example of what we're looking at here.
Yep. And so, you know, I think this is going to be a really interesting negotiation to follow. As it's not only going to have widespread implications and a ripple effect, so to speak, not just for our economy, but for other economies. But, you know, in terms of spurring domestic growth and in terms of growing domestic GDP and some of these other trends that we're looking at from an economic standpoint, I would say that this might be a pretty significant piece of legislation that's going to impact kind of the trajectory for where the rest of that might go.
Right. And so if you had to guess, if you were a gambling man, where do you think it's heading?
I don't know. My own personal thought is I think it's really tough to completely do away with deals as large as NAFTA. So while I think that that probably is the intention, what I'm really curious about is once you start getting into the details of renegotiating this whole thing, and we really look at what the effects would be if we were to actually get rid of it, and let's say we weren't able to renegotiate it and come back to terms, and so there was no trade agreement. When you start weighing those different pieces together, I don't know exactly where we're going to fall on that scale. So I'm actually really curious to see what ends up happening.
Yeah, well, you know, anytime you get some politicians together in a room, regardless what country they might be from, no man's life, liberty, or property is safe from the government. And, you know, there's going to be winners here. There's going to be losers. My bet is, because this was such a big Trump campaign plank, and because it's something that he really does have control over, because while Congress has to agree to the renegotiation of NAFTA, he has the ability to just scrap it. And if they back him into a wall, he'll scrap it. And let's do bilateral. Is a trilateral agreement better than a bilateral agreement, at least for the U.S.?
I think so. I think the more players that you can have an agreement, assuming that they're working towards common goals, common interests, I think it always is better the more players that you can have at the table. The reality of whether or not that's actually going to happen remains to be seen. Because I think that, like you said, I think there will be winners and losers. And I don't know that the things that are going to be renegotiated in the deal are going to be, I think they may be more directed towards, you know, certain players than other players. And so I think that the ability to have, you know, a trilateral agreement, especially if the deal is scrapped and started over, may be a little bit harder than to have a bilateral agreement. But if we can get there, I think that'd be great.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the Canadians are kind of caught in the crossfire. I mean, yeah, they might be a little bit crazy about subsidizing softwood exports and keeping out U.S. dairy products. But overall, that relationship works, and probably to the mutual benefit. The one that doesn't work really is Mexico. And that's what's going to be interesting to see. And I think you've got to look at the optics of this, too. When you look at Trump not being able to get health care reform through, Sam, tax reform being stalled, but now it's looking like it's taking on a life of its own. This is something that he really can do to appear to be benefiting those people who helped vote him into office. So, the presidency's not going well. And if he scraps it, you know, the Brexit states that voted for him, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, Iowa, almost Minnesota, will they'll break out the champagne or the Colt 45 malt liquor, right?
Yeah, they very well could. You hit a really interesting point, which is that, you know, oftentimes we like to argue the economics of a deal and you know, who's really going to benefit and what's the impetus for making changes. But it always gets muddled because there is a geopolitical landscape that's kind of evolving also. It's hard to argue any of these points, but if things had gone differently, let's say that, you know, healthcare had gotten through, or let's say taxes had changed already, then would we be taking as hard a stance on NAFTA? I don't know. So it is interesting because, as you mentioned, there is the ability to scrap this, and from a political standpoint, is it going to change, you know, decisions that may have otherwise gone another way?
Right. Yeah. And I guess we're just going to have to see, because we don't know. But the negotiations, so we had the first stage, and there's three more stages. Stage one, that just concluded over the weekend, and nobody looked too happy there, particularly the Mexicans. You know, they were not feeling the love, shall we say. And they're the ones that are going to get squeezed here in the end. And is it going to matter to their people or not? They're making threats. One of their officials of unleashing, illegal aliens like they haven't been already. You know, you really got to wonder what's going to happen here. I think, like you said, geopolitically, you know, this could be a line in the sand that shows that Trump to his constituency, I am effective. I am looking out for you. Throw these idiots out of Congress, you know, elect the people who I'm supporting in the primaries, you know, make them your candidates, and we'll get something done. And, you know, a little bit of symbolism in this country, Sam, can go a long way.
Yeah, it could.
Well, I guess we're going to find out shortly. We got four more stages left. And hey, the other thing, Sam, which we'd be really remiss not to mention, these talks are on an accelerated timetable. Okay. Usually when bureaucrats do stuff, right, it just drags on and on and on. And you can watch, moss grow on the rocks in the time it takes them to do anything. This one is really moving fast. I think they're going to be done one way or the other in October, right?
Yeah, it looks like it could be. I mean, I think everybody wants to get resolution to it in a sense, and it definitely is moving faster than many other deals or trade talks have moved. But we also have to see the trajectory and what ends up happening. So, you know, if there ends up being an impasse and one side has to push or the other side kind of digs in their heels, we'll see if that stalls it or if it just becomes a roadblock that gets run through. But so far, it's definitely on track to move much faster than many other deals historically.
Yeah, it's shockingly fast, right? They're doing it faster than healthcare reform or tax reduction or anything else. And going to be interesting.
Yeah, and the question is that a good thing? Yeah, and part of the question is that a good thing or a bad thing? You know, oftentimes, you know, if deals are taking longer, it's because things are being negotiated. Things are often happening behind the scenes that we're not always privy to also. And ultimately, there's more talking involved. You know, when things move quickly, if everybody's not on the same page, then sometimes that can actually lead to things being done inefficiently or things that need to be considered not having been considered. And sometimes you'll end up with something later down the road that was unintended that could actually come back to bite you also.
Yeah. Well, no easy solutions either way. And it looks like this could be something, though, that really happens a lot quicker, faster, more dramatically than any of you were expecting. Let's see what happens. So Sam McElroy at atfinancial.com. You find a link in the show notes to this interview. As always, questions, comments on this one or any others, it's kl@carrylutz.com. That's the email address. And the Twitter feed's @CarrieLutz. That thing's been heating up lately. I totally don't understand why. And, of course, the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Sam, thanks so much for being on with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.